like a guy who invents a radio or a light bulb or a television or an iPhone or something like that, actually came up with the original idea and then used this physical 3D realm and the resources available within it to manifest it into reality. Now, those things that we manifest into reality, I think, are actually far more powerful than any prayer or spiritual belief in many, many ways, because they can affect the entirety of the spectrum. All right, you know, like, what it is to be human is about being physical, spiritual, and mental. Okay, I'm especially mental, and what we got is an ability to bring something into the physical realm that can actually, in some cases, affect both the spiritual and mental realms. All right, I don't know many things about the spiritual or mental realms that are capable of actually affecting the two other elements with such ease. There are things that you can do, like you can practice, and apparently some people are telekinetic and what have you after they've been meditating for 60 years or whatever. But if I wanted to move a chair, as Alan Eber Desagreen told me, I would move the chair, not meditate for 60 years so I didn't have to move it with my hands.
So that's a good point. You know, a lot of the, I mean, because how can you be controlling of it, of the reality everywhere all over the world, and then there's all these other people, so you would have to almost think that no one existed but you, right?
That's exactly what solipsism is.
So it's like extreme egocentric.
No, it's universal egocentricity. All right, I'm not just me and everything's about me. It's I am the universe, all of it, everything in it, and I control it all like a god.
Right.
You know? Oh, that's called acid.
Yeah. it's funny because before you said acid, I was about to say tripping balls, which is incidentally what you do while on acid.
Yeah. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. And back to the point of comedians. I got interviewed by Dr. Bill Deagle this one time on the Genesis Network, I think, and he said that the two most intelligent professions, like the ones with the highest IQ, are theoretical physicists and comedians. Mm. The ability to make theoretical connections that work in a very solid and rigid form, more or less, is the baseline of intelligence for both of those fields. One is about understanding; they're both about understanding complex systems and simplifying them so that they can be used for something.
Hmm. Well, that's fascinating. That's great.
It is, yeah.
And it makes the comedians. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, because we're always talking about comedians, how they're awake, and it's because of, you know, we believe it's their job to observe society, but also to have, like, the interconnections within themselves and to see how it relates to them and the courage to be able to admit it, you know?
Right. Yeah, and that's the good ones, too.
Hmm?
Yeah,
I meant like the good ones, not necessarily every comedian.
Yeah, no, the good ones.
Yeah.
Well, the ones that are really funny.
The ones that are already dead.
Laugh so hard your stomach, like, you know, splits. Those.
Yeah. The ones that are already dead, in other words. And
the dead ones, only the dead ones.
Yeah. Have you noticed that the live artists and things like that will never ever measure up to the dead ones? It's because the dead ones can't answer back, and it's like, you know, if a modern orchestra or conductor or something like that came up with something better than Mozart or whatever, Mozart's not around to say, oh, nah, that's chicken shit, bro. I'll just do this. I'll suss it. I'll make a way better symphony. No, it doesn't happen, eh? So therefore, we're relegated to respect those who have died and come before us, because at the end of the day, anybody who comes up with any great art form nowadays, I don't think it's entirely original, because it's all based upon what art they've seen, how it makes them feel, that you always see these influences and elements from other things that are going in there. And in such a way, we've got this historical context by which we can follow art forms, whether it's a comedy going back to, what's his name? There's Greek comedy plays and things like that thousands of years ago. And allegedly there's only something like 7 different storylines. And apparently today, if you apply those basic plot storylines to every single Hollywood film, there are none of them that fall outside of it or something like that, or very few. Right. So the way that we make art doesn't change. It's only what the art looks like and what the end product is.
Right. We have different tools to express it, you know, photography, or you have, you know, because at one point everything was, you know, there was no such thing as a camera, right? So everything was a painting.
You had to paint and draw.
Right, exactly. You had to draw or paint. And so, and even that, you know, took materials. At one point, you know, my son likes to do this thing where he takes blueberries and he smears them on the wall. It's like a form of cave art, right? So you had, at one point, they would just take whatever materials they had, be it flowers or fruit or something, and just smear it on the wall and so on and so forth. So it's like the technology that changes, not the art.
So from blueberries to like Photoshop now, right?
It's like, exactly. Yeah.
Well, so it means that the human ability to produce art is only limited by our technology, and our technology is only limited by our creativity. All right? And there are no limits to creativity. Not in my opinion, anyway. I could be wrong.
No, they're not. No. No, I mean, you're right.
You know,
right.
maybe somebody will come up with a mathematical formula like all human creativity and the ability to come up with anything original and anything new will stop at, like, I don't know, 2150 or something like that. You know, I don't think that's going to happen. And this is why I never believe in the end of the world stuff. You know, like people going on about 2012, they're going about Y2K, they're going about Nostradamus or whatever his name was. And
I was into that until after Y2K. I was like, I was done.
Yeah. See, people were asking me during 2012, what do you think is going to happen? Well, it's either one of three things. It's either the prophesized return of the destroyer that's in the Bible and everybody's fracked, or it's a some ridiculous consciousness shift or whatever, and we turn into fifth dimensional beings and we transcend time and space and we all float away like a bunch of ghosts into space. Or three, it's a completely made up myth to distract everybody with a whole bunch of fear paradigm BS so that they can get away with a whole bunch of more scumbaggery in the meantime while you're distracted by an end of the world that ain't coming. And even well before 2012, I was choosing option number three, and it turns out I was correct. So it occurs to me that being utterly cynical whenever it's the end of the world will probably save you. I'm going to be like a perpetual doomsday naysayer, you know. Oh, Comet Ivan's coming. There's going to be 800-kilometer-an-hour winds from giant cyclones that'll cover half the hemisphere. No, it's not. there's some other freaking thing coming out of this. There's a flying spaghetti monster that shoots vaccines out of its tentacles.
Oh, that was terrible. Oh, my God. I got an image in my head. That's awful.
Yeah.
The backseats on the spaghetti and the sauce, like, dripping. Oh,
it'll be like on Ghostbusters where the demon comes out and asks them to choose their fate, and he chooses the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. This flying spaghetti monster that shoots mercury vaccines out of its spaghetti testicles. What did I say, testicles on it? I'm sorry.
Oh no.
I wonder what spaghetti testicles would look like. You're kind of wrinkly.
Oh my God, I'm gonna have nightmares tonight.
Firstine, what is it? I was having dreams about the giant flying spaghetti monster testicles.
Do you think that I heard David Icke and some analysts that have been talking about, like, this is coming, like, awakening or of consciousness. Do you see that? What are your thoughts on that? What do you think about that?
Do I see it, a huge mass awakening of consciousness? Yeah, in terms of...
I guess you'd say, like, between, like, now and 2016.
I hate coming up with I don't agree with that whatsoever. If anything, people are becoming dumber and dumber and sheepisher and sheepisher, and then there's a splinter fraction of humanity that's doing the direct opposite. They're becoming smarter and smarter and more protected from vaccines and stuff like that, and are taking care of their health, and the rest of the sheep and stuff like that are just basically going to get so dumb that they'll wind up killing themselves through no fault of their own, just through accepting the programming and brainwashing and what have you, and then it'll basically just be left the super psychopathic elite and the super smart, super healthy good people fighting against each other, you know,
like chess.
Yeah, I mean more or less there's only a certain number of pieces on the board, and at the end of the day there's only usually a few key pieces that you need to win an entire game in a lot of cases. So when we're talking about a consciousness shift by what did he say, 2020, 2025? Incidentally, that's the date for like implementation of huge amounts of Agenda 21 protocols or whatever. That's when we'll all be living in the slave blocks. That's when we'll be connected with mega highways and what have you. That's when the Fukushima radiation will make the Northern Hemisphere uninhabitable. That's when the chemtrails, that's like 10 years after the chemtrails make the Northern Hemisphere uninhabitable, according to Dane Wigington and so on and so forth. Look. You want to make a prediction, you've got to have all available information on the entire planet. You name me one person who's got access to all information on the entire planet at any one time, it's not freaking possible. Predictions based upon very specific things can be made through a much smaller cache of information. You take a look at, what's his name, Gerald Celente. The reason why his Trends Research Journal is so incredible and so credible at the same time as being incredible, ironically enough, is because he only goes for the trends in the economy and things like that, the things he can predict with the available information. Predicting a mass global consciousness shift would require an intense understanding of what consciousness is, how every single person's individual consciousness is currently being affected today, how much technology is being used in order to accelerate this consciousness, the amount of conscious people awake already that are currently spreading and multiplying that consciousness among other people around them, the different philosophies behind each and every single one of these different consciousnesses and exactly how they replicate and going in through. You see, it's all really getting too complicated, and I've only even started the list of the things you would need to know in order to make a prediction like that. The real simple things that we can understand, though, is conspiracy culture is getting a hell of a lot bigger. All right? Now, you would define that as kind of a consciousness shift, wouldn't you? Believing that the police are good to you and now knowing that they're scumbags? You know, or I don't need to throw them under the bus, although they've probably done that to a few pedestrians that they didn't like. You know, he was selling
drugs. Literally, so. Yeah.
Yeah. But it comes down to that. It's like the tortoise and the hare. The New World Order is the tortoise, and they've started off early, and they've been moving very, very slowly towards the finish line. We're the rabbit that's just woken up. We're right down the end of the track, and we're running for the finish line, just hoping we beat that slow-moving tortoise there just in time. Okay, and I think that's what it comes down to. I like that idea that we're coming to a head that is just in time and what have you, but I've been to far too many protests, interviewed far too many people and heard far too many predictions to believe that they'll all make a difference or all come to fruition or even any of them for that matter. The fact of the matter is everything's totally unpredictable because everything changes on a minute-to-minute basis. One person gets through a security checkpoint, grabs a microphone and tells everybody to investigate 9/11 on the Super Bowl. Who the frick predicted that would happen?
Right.
You know, and you know what is the great thing about being human is that we've got the ability to plan, scheme, come up with defensive strategies, whether militarily or intellectually or emotionally. There's all these kinds of strategies that we can come up with to change things, invent stuff, and make the world a better place. And I think kind of predicting stuff is almost like throwing that out the window, you know? Assuming no creativity or anything changes from this point on, in 20 years' time, we'll have this consciousness shift. Come on, bro! Come on!
So you're saying you don't know anything, basically. Oh, that long explanation.
I know what's
that's true. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I'm just messing with you.
That's a good point, yeah.
I know what has happened in history, and I kind of know a lot of things that are going on now, or at least I know parts of it. Maybe I need to fill in the gaps on occasion and what have you, but nobody knows the future. I do know that everything that I do right at this very second affects my future in some small, insignificant way, like the butterfly effect, you know, a little word in the air or what have you. I mean, I talked on your show about my male mentor, Derek, who kind of, you know, when I was a young boy and was really violent and stuff like that at school, it kind of, my violence just went away because I had a positive male role model who was really peaceful and a very good dude, right?
Right.
So what if we were to take the influences of the New World Order and turn it against them, the same way my male violence was turned against me when a non-violent male came into it, you know?
Did you ever see the old Disney Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah.
The old one. It's like, remember the fairies? They can never use their powers for bad, but they can turn their powers into someone's bad power into something good. Like if the queen threw arrows at them, they could turn them into flowers or rocks. They would turn them into like bubbles or something like that, right?
Mm. Yeah. I think that's the... That's one of the things about the Jedi that I like the idea of the guardians of peace and justice in the galaxy, and that a Jedi uses his skills for knowledge and defense, never for attack. Mm. Yeah. I mean, I think that it would actually be quite cool if our police force had a similar thing like Jedi training, you know?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be choice if there were like these non-violent kind of monks who could kill huge quantities of people at any point if they wanted to, if they were being attacked or threatened or what have you, you know, just these hugely powerful dudes who are so humble and want nothing but to serve humanity, you know?
Yeah.
And there are a lot of powerful people on this world today who do nothing but try and serve humanity. I think they should be respected for that, because I don't know what the balance is, how much power you need, how much self-restraint, how much wealth, how much skills or intelligence or whatever you need to be perfect. I don't really care how much of this, that, or the other. Just try and not be a dick and try and help people who need help. I mean... It boils down to the simplicity at the end of the day. There's so many complex things over there, and it drives you nuts thinking about all the complexity.
Yeah, yes. It can. It can.
It's
definitely.
True. Which, like, that's a good point that you bring up, which makes it impossible to predict because there is so much complexity, and that would assume that you would understand so much of how people think or how much, you know. There's just too many variables to predict how the entire, you know, global consciousness is going to change. You know, you can maybe see a shift. And I think when you're talking about history, that's probably our best predictor, is because history does repeat. So we see that patterns in history of things that happened before, you know, we could compare the United States to Rome, you know, the fall of Rome, what happened just before that happened, and say, well, you know, I can kind of see some similarities there. You know,
I remember, Ian Crane, Ian R. Crane was doing a presentation called What to Do When the Shift Hits the Fan. Mm-hmm. And I said to him he should do a follow-up to that lecture called How to Get Your Shift Together. And what we were really wanting, or at least what I was hoping by this, is people would stop living in anxiety of the future, stop living in fear of something bad about to happen, and stop living in hope of something good to happen. How about you keep your focus here and now, where it belongs, where you can make a difference? Past has already happened, you can't change that. Future hasn't happened yet, so you can do stuff today to affect it. You know, I mean, visionary, right? That's a thing that's been used to describe many people who have changed history for the better. You know, I had a vision. And I think that is still a big part to play here. I mean, you name me one group of people who's really changed everything, and then name me individuals who have changed things by leading groups of people. That's actually traditionally how the change comes, right? So we all naturally appeal to authority. What if it was for a good reason?
Mm.
All right? Because occasionally, and I think this is why appeal to authority is such a logical fallacy, is because it's not necessarily true. Right? I can't appeal to that authority because just appealing to authority in and of itself doesn't work. It's a fallacy. But if this person here has huge quantities of documents, has power to change the world for the better, isn't just promising things that he can't deliver, and is actually leading people towards a brighter future, then wouldn't that appeal to you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, seeing as that's the difference between you appealing to authority and having an authority that is appealing to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, and then I think, like, when it comes, going back to, like, the whole, end of the world scenarios, you know, I always feel like I don't really understand what that's going to accomplish, you know, when you're saying, oh, well, these things in this amount of time, there's going to be this big catastrophe and all these things. It's like, well, either it's going to happen or it's not going to happen. But I have to live today, as you were pointing out, you know, there are things that you could do right here and now, because no matter what you do, you're not getting out of this life alive. Okay. One way or another, you're gonna die. So it could be in a catastrophe.
Snap. Yeah.
Right. Or it could be, you know, after 105 years, because you lived a really healthy lifestyle and you took care of yourself, and, you know, the world didn't end, you know. But, or it could happen. So I don't really get the point in kind of thinking about predicting, you know, the end, or predicting, you know, what other people are gonna do, or things like that. Yeah. It doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, I predict tomorrow the sun will come up. Damn, I'm good.
But if it doesn't, then you're screwed, you know?
No, but the thing is, we're all screwed if that happens, so it doesn't matter if I'll be incorrect, because anybody to criticize me and pull me up on it will be dead,
right?
Yeah.
Hence, you can't lose if you deny doomsday. You just can't.
Yeah, right, exactly.
You either live and don't live life in anxiety, or you die along with everybody else in peace. You know, there you go.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. It's only going to happen. It's only going to happen one of two ways. So whatever, you know. So exactly.
Extraordinarily, people have lost their ability to want to live. Right, and I think this is on the part of pharmaceutical drugs to a quite extensive degree. What's the number one killer in America, ladies and gentlemen? Drum roll, please. Suicide.
Oh, all right.
And what is everybody of those suicidal people actually doing at the time? Taking pharmaceutical drugs. And what's on the warning label of those pharmaceutical drugs? May cause suicide.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that frickin' simple. To be Jonesian,
the New World Order's got a whole raft of scumbaggery that's working through that medical system and pumping you full of drugs to make you deny reality and try to escape things and make sure that drugs are the only thing that are actually left for you. And I'm sick of it. It's documented. I've got the evidence. I have the documents.
Could you cry too? Would you cry?
I'm just so sad about the New World Order. They're gonna take my children and cancel my job. Oh Lord, please help me. I just want to have the strength of God and all the infinite consciousness to defend my family and frick up these freaking scumbaggery.
He goes to the full range of emotions, that guy.
But no, I have a lot of respect for Alex Jones.
Who do you think woke me up? Who do you think motivated me to become a talk radio show and expose some scumbaggery every day? Here's the thing.
But that's how you know. That's why we're able to do this so well, because you know how he is.
Oh yeah, and I was addicted.
Huh?
I get addicted to it though. For a period of time, I don't really listen to him much anymore. Because In fact, I had somebody else tell me this the other day. I asked him if he'd seen one of my videos or something, and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm just making so much of my own stuff. I don't have time to watch everybody else's stuff." And I go, "Bro, that is my favorite excuse, and I use it regularly."
But it's true. Same thing with us.
Yeah,
we have,
like, I know.
Video shows and stuff, and we don't really have the time to watch.
I said to my listeners once, I would rather every single one of my listeners stop listening to me and start their own radio show and put me out of business and replace me with tens and tens of thousands of other radio show hosts out there. I would actually prefer that to happen, because at least people are being empowered and they're not listening to somebody else, and they're actually making their own opinions heard, and they're putting their voices out there, and they're exposing quantitatively more scumbaggery than I could expose on my own.
Yeah, that's a good point. We had somebody in our chat room recently, our last show, and I think we had just – we don't watch Alex Jones that much or any of these people really all that much, but we had just mentioned him, and this guy in the chat room was like, "Stop listening to Alex Jones. Don't listen to him." And I think I responded, "Well, we try to listen to a little bit of everything." And he said, "Yeah, but you don't listen to him at all. Don't even talk about him." And I'm like, "God, relax, dude. I mean, what do you think about these people that get all, like, hopped up on that, and they think that everybody is an agent or everybody's going out there and is secretly working for the New World Order? It's like, I don't know what to do with that information." I'm like, okay, well, you know, we just brought him up. I don't think we were, like, promoting his show or anything like that. And he was just going,
"And even
no,
if
you can't
we were,
talk about it."
Like... But even if we were, like, so what? It's not, you know.
Well, here's what somebody told me once. He doesn't need promotion. He's Alex Jones. Mm-hmm. You know? He got it locked down. He's numero uno. There ain't no arguments about it. He's like number 1,000 of websites in the world, something around that area. With millions upon millions upon millions of views of his documentaries, and all of his listenership all over the place, mass responses, the huge studios, and all of that kind of jazz that he's got, he doesn't need our help to a large degree, right. and he can't give any to us, you know, and so there's this disconnect here between what Alex Jones is, what he can do. And then what he's doing it for. And people, because he's accumulated wealth and power as a result of his ridiculously hard work, nobody can deny that, people think that he's doing it because he's got something to gain. Look, with a voice like that, talent like that, you could be making millions and millions and millions of dollars just doing radio ads for mainstream radio networks. Easily work a couple of weeks a year tops, you know. He doesn't do that. Okay, that's not the entire reason why he's in it. There are many things that everybody does, and for frack's sake, if you don't know the person very very well, it's very difficult to criticize, isn't it? Because you don't actually know what you're criticizing, much like a doctor who will come up and flagrantly abuse another doctor who's making something and claimed in a paper that doctor has never read.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's a good point. I just thought, you know, relax, dude. I mean, it's not like, because I don't even remember what we said, because I wasn't even listening to the show at the time. So, but I guess we had made some kind of mention of him, and he just got so worked up. But I mean, that's a good point. It's like, he could be doing all these other things. He could be making, I think that it's indisputable that he works hard, and I think it's indisputable that he's really smart, and he remembers things really well, and he has a lot of, you know, a lot of good people working for him that are researching really well. And that's it. That's all I'm going to say about that. But this guy got all offended, you know? So I don't know. I think that at some point people reach a certain amount of success. Like, did anyone try and call you an agent, Vinny? Did anyone sit there and say that you're working for the other side secretly, or you have some hidden agenda or something? Has that ever happened?
I've been called an agent, a stooge, and a pedophile, and a moron, and a charlatan, and a
racist,
a murderer, a racist. I've been accused of driving people insane and making them afraid, and of course they can never produce evidence for any of these claims.
Right, of course.
Which is why the block function. Again, I reiterate.
It's I feel like naming all these like names that you've been calling. We're like laughing in the background.
Oh yeah.
But it's, you know, it's because it's ridiculous, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Right. And if somebody's being ridiculous and they don't accept a simple explanation and they assume you got something to hide when they don't have any evidence that you're actually hiding anything whatsoever, no probable cause or anything of that nature, then block them because they're clearly not in the right mind, and you don't want to have people who are crazy taunting you and attacking you and stressing you out all the time, because there are a lot of people that can still be saved from their ignorance.
Mm. And you know, this whole thing with the social networking, we've been talking about this on our show quite frequently, is that you notice how there's this lack of empathy that people kind of, they can address you like you're not an actual human being. You know, they talk to you in such a way that is so offensive and so mean and mean-spirited and ridiculing. Oh, yeah. But I mean, they would never talk to you like that if you were standing in front of them.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, you'd be surprised, actually.
Oh, well. well, corrected.
Some people have the gall to do it because they really are that heartless. But I remember when my friend James Wright, who's a Freemason whistleblower, had an attempt on his life, and they shot out his tire and his he had this big hole through it, and it looked like they had some kind of explosive device underneath his car that malfunctioned or something like that. And all these burn marks up the back of his car over the side of the road on his way down to San Diego. A big Freemason van or something like that pulls up beside him, and then all of a sudden his car goes boom, his tire goes flying off, and his car just kind of like comes to a screeching halt. Just terrified, absolutely freaking terrified. And I make this quick video for him and put him up online, and on this one group people go, ha ha ha, shame, you know, like, bro, if your friend just nearly died because somebody tried to just freaking murder him.
Right.
And you were running around trying to get some help or some coverage for it or something like that, and somebody laughed at you, how would you feel? You know?
Yeah.
Right.
And the thing is, he just still continued laughing. And I left that group promptly. You know? Because I think when you see terrible human behavior, it has an effect on you. You just got to freaking get by somehow. Not everybody's problems are your problems, and you can't solve them and things like that. So, you know, spend time where it's actually valued. You know, I remember sometimes I used to back in the day, I used to let people really get to me. So, like, one host or one guest on my show or something wouldn't show up, and they'd be real snarky about it and kind of like mean to me and at like late notice or whatever. And I got real angry with them. Really, really angry. Like, just everything but throwing stuff around, you know. And instead of attacking them on Facebook, harassing them, starting up videos, criticizing them and things of that nature, I helped 10 people instead.
Mm-hmm. You know? I know, because it takes energy to make videos. You know what I mean? Like, all the stuff that they do, too. It's
right.
Like, you could be putting your energy into helping 10 or more people.
Yeah.
Or doing something else. Writing a song. I don't know. Learning a language. Something.
Yeah. Well, hate takes as much energy as love. And it's just, it's about one-tenth as rewarding. And I think people are talking about the karma bank. You ever heard of that phrase?
Yeah.
Yeah, I have.
And I've been saying for a bit of time now, I don't believe in the karma bank. And I believe in the community bank. Whereas, let's say, for example, myself, I do a whole lot of work in the community. Video Dr. Paul Connett and put his videos up on YouTube for free and all of that kind of stuff and whatnot. All the eclectic stuff that I do is not done charging anybody money. You know, occasionally they'll give me something for it, but I just ask for donations. And because I'm putting stuff up in public, into the community, and actually benefiting the community in which it stands, the public acts as my piggy bank to a degree and actually supports me in the work that I'm doing. That's not karma giving me those donations every single day. It's not karma that made me go out and help people and things of that nature. It's simply community. An actual feeling, something real tangible. Because I can't go up to Karma and go, hey, Karma, bro, how come you haven't killed any Rothschilds or Rockefellers? Or karma, bro. How come? How come all the good people are living in poverty, and all the real douchebags are living the lap of luxury? You know, right. Karma, bro. Why is it that only good people get assassinated and bad people live forever?
Right. It's true. They're all so old. You know, these Rockefellers.
I know. It's like into their hundreds.
And the royal family in England, they're so old. They're always into their hundreds. It's like, how do they do it? I don't know.
All the blood they drink, of course. It has to be.
All the fresh young virgins that we eat.
All the fresh young virgin blood, of course.
Yeah, the baby.
That's what, like. Yeah.
And I'm sure the groomer of the stool has something to say about their diet.
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's true. They always have, and but what you're offering is a community service. So that is something to be paid for, because that's the point that I brought up. I think I did a video a while back where I talked about, you know, paying taxes, and I said, well, what if we just, you know, as a community, just pay people directly? You know, like let's you want to give your tax money away because you want to clean up a pothole. Well, what if you actually just paid the contractor who knows how to cement and who knows how to fix these things, and then you can actually, you know, get those things done, and you would know where your money went versus into this pool, which, like, God knows where it goes, you know, because they don't give you an itemized receipt. You don't know where any of this money goes.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. Well, I thought two good ideas while you were saying that. Tax volunteering. Okay, let's say, for example, a tax department says you owe, I don't know, 5 Gs or whatever. Now, regardless of it being illegal, let's say, for example, it wasn't illegal and there was actually good things that was happening with that money, even though government wastes about $30 for every $1 they give you back to you. But let's say you were to volunteer a couple of hours or something like that per week or in the day or something like that, and you'd like clean up a community garden or something of that nature. You'd actually contribute something to the community in lieu of paying taxation. You can give your time rather than your money. Or if, let's say, you've got plenty of money but you've got bugger all time, you can give them some money and so that you can have some time to yourself. There's that option. Also, there's the tax checklist. All right, let's say, you know, when you vote, they send you out a voting paper or whatever. Let's say they send you out a taxing paper, and you have a checklist of all the things that you want your taxes to pay for. You, personally, I want all my money to go to these tax-funded operations. So we'll have foreign debt, foreign wars, surveilling the people, funding dangerous medical practices, and so on. And cleaning up parks and making roads and things like that. Wouldn't it be very interesting for the people to determine what the budget is for particular government operations?
Right. Yeah, isn't that a novel idea? Like full disclosure, you know, to know the budget and like know what these things, what everything was being used for and what you were paying for it. That would be really neat.
And also, if you were a tax volunteer on the other side of the spectrum and what have you, it'd be a hell of a lot nicer to have a choice about how you're forced into paying your taxation rather than having no choice about whether or not you pay your taxation or how you pay it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Right.
Maybe that could be a stepping stone, right. You know, if you implement that first and then implement the volunteer taxation system with what you want, your full disclosure taxation and what you want that in. You know, it'd be kind of like transitioning from one to the other, from taxation that you don't know where it goes, that gets charged a certain amount that's determined by somebody else that you have absolutely no influence of, who has absolutely no authority or law behind what they're doing, to voluntary taxation and or volunteering and or community build-up, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. I think that society does need some form of centralization, just in terms of community responsibility. You know, people got to have water and electricity and the basics and so on and so forth. And not everybody's got the time to do it. So somebody needs to be organized and have volunteers or even paid professionals in order to do it. You know, because I think the NYPD, when it was first started, I think it was in the late 1800s or something like that. I forget how old the NYPD is, but first professional police force in the world kind of thing, or in America. Mm-hmm. And they had such a low budget that they had to make all their badges out of roofing copper. And that's why people called them coppers, which was later shortened to cops.
Oh.
Hmm.
I had no idea.
Yeah. And they used to be loved by the community because there was a lot of violence and theft going on, and they'd just start walking around and just keeping the peace, and people would bake them pies, they would talk to them, they would inform them about crimes that had been going on in the area and things like that, and certain criminals that they thought that they should have a look for, because policing is about being in touch with the community, not just the criminal element. Okay, because if you're only going after criminals, then you see everybody as a criminal, including the innocent ones.
Right.
Whereas I think the main point about policing that people need to take, and particularly take this out of the old English policing style, which was you can accomplish a hell of a lot more with a pen and paper than you can with a gun or a taser. Mm-hmm. You know, let's say, for example, you wanted to find a criminal. Where the hell would he hide if the entire community talks to and is friendly with the police?
Hmm.
You know? And yeah. The police would only be talkative and friendly if they weren't trying to beat up everybody all the time and kill people and get away with it, you know?
Yeah,
we had this big incident in New Zealand. I'm sorry, I'm talking quite a bit, aren't I?
What, on your show? No, yeah, you can't talk a lot on your show.
No. Well, actually, you really shouldn't talk a lot on your own show, apparently, unless you're just kind of doing it solo or whatever. But anyway, we had this incident in New Zealand where these two boys, you know, like 20-year-olds or whatever, were raping girls and putting up videos on YouTube talking about, yeah, we raped these girls and stuff like that, and the police didn't do nothing. All right, and then a left-wing journalist in New Zealand, Bomber Bradbury, criticised the police for not taking action, and then the police, instead of taking action and arresting rapists, they fine Bomber Bradbury, going to take him to court, and he's either going to get a huge fine or go to jail.
Wow.
For criticising the police for not arresting rapists who admit that they're rapists. Does that sound like a trustworthy police force to you? And the police are saying that what Bomber did is that he distilled mistrust and a lack of faith in the police, and that they don't want to deal with that negative publicity. And I go, well, here's a way for you to stop negative publicity. Stop protecting rapists and stop killing people.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that, you know, fair enough, you know? Hey, everybody, I arrest rapists and don't kill innocent people. Hey, well, that's respectable as opposed to the opposite.
Yeah, I know.
Right, they did that to themselves by not protecting the people, you know, and defending rapists. And then they blame the person who called them out for it. It's like these guys who go after these whistleblowers, you know, and they say that they're unpatriotic or that they're putting us all in risk. It's like, well, you're the one who's doing these illegal wars in the first place, so what do you mean? You know, this guy's just telling us that.
I know. No, they just made you look stupid and embarrassed you. That's why you're angry. They're not putting us in danger or putting, yeah. You know.
No, well, they're the ones that are putting us in danger. They're the ones who are out there,
but not the whistleblowers, right?
Right. Not the
whistleblowers. They get mad at they're mad at the whistleblowers, but they're mad at the whistleblowers because the whistleblowers made them look stupid or expose them.
Yeah,
put them on blast, in slang terms, right?
Yeah.
That's why they're mad.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It was like whistleblowers or what have you. Oh, Vinny, this person is having terrible stuff happen to him. I don't know why. Do they work to a massive organization that involves lots of money? Yeah. Are they about to expose that massive organization that has a lot of money? Yeah. Are they going to threaten their business practice or credibility and maybe even threaten a few incredibly powerful people's jobs or employment or reputation or anything of that nature? Yeah. Are they doing the right thing by doing this? Yeah. Okay. Then that makes sense.
Right. Exactly. But it's just, it shows to show, you know, how we talk about this sometimes a lot, but it, and in our movement, I think, and it almost becomes like cliche.
It's the whole
Orwellian thing. You know, it's the Orwellian. It's like everything is backwards, but it really is. It's really, you know, the people who are claiming that these whistleblowers are putting us in harm are actually the ones that are putting you in harm. You know, because they're the ones that are sending young people out to Afghanistan and to burn villages and rape and kill children, you know? Kill
it's like and then they come back and they kill themselves, so...
Right, know. Exactly. And then they're saying, well, but then these guys who expose that are the ones that are actually doing it. No, by exposing it, they're actually maybe giving people a fighting chance to avoid going, you know, they because maybe they have a false sense of that they're going to actually help, maybe because they don't know the official story of 9/11. They don't know this whole thing is BS. And so they think they're helping their country by going into the military. And if by learning that maybe that's not a good idea because these people are all liars and they're actually hurting and killing children and murdering babies and doing all these horrible, horrible, horrible things that they're sent there to do because of why? Because they're chasing energy, they're chasing oil, they're, you know, looking for natural gas or whatever it is that they're doing. You know, it's certainly not to protect anybody.
Yeah. You get this assumptive criticism or cynicism, sorry, with truthers these days, you know. It's like, it was quite funny, actually. My missus told me, Vinny, did you hear that there was a massive truck bomb that they found in Times Square? And I go, oh, don't worry about it, baby. It's probably the FBI. And it was.
Yeah, well, right.
And I came to a profound realization that day. When bombs get found, it's usually because they're the FBI. When bombs right. go off, it's because it's the CIA.
Mm. Oh. Wow.
Yeah, that's it. That's interesting thing to say, you know. But to, in the yeah, I guess there's a sort of cynicism maybe in the truth movement, or sometimes do you get accused of being like too quick to call something a false flag? Like when Sandy Hook happened, I went, oh, like that looks really false flag.
Oh yeah, we're over it. We're just like, psh.
But you know, but yeah. I mean, there was but people will say, oh, you know, you're so quick to call something a false flag, you conspiracy theorist, you know.
Well, not everything is a false flag, April. Not everything.
Right. That's not everything is a false flag.
I mean, no, some.
Yeah, people tell me that all the time. Like, Vinny, not everything's a conspiracy. And I go, I know not everything's a conspiracy. Just most things.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, but I. Well, to call something a conspiracy or to be called a conspiracy theorist is considered to be kind of a slur, or it's kind of a, or even to be called a truther. But I find that kind of funny, because what's the opposite of a truther? Wouldn't that be a liar? So if it's an insult to be called a truther, is that a compliment to be called a liar? You know, I mean, is it really that when you, if you know anything about history and you know that there are so many conspiracies that happen all the time. I mean, even you go to your kid's local playground at the schoolyard and you'll see kids like plotting conspiracies, you know, it's just normal. People do it all the time. But yet they say it's a slur to be called a conspiracy theorist, or it makes you somehow irrational. But I would say you're irrational to think that they don't exist.
Yeah.
When that, you know, so I don't mind. I don't, people can call me, they can call it a slur. To me, it doesn't feel like a slur.
Yeah. Miss Hoover, Jimmy said he's going to put toxic mercury in the vaccines. Oh, you do. Oh, Thomas, you're just a conspiracy theorist. Go back and play in the sand.
But little kids will conspire against each other, though, no? I mean, you know, they'll say, let's when Hannah comes in the classroom, let's pretend like we don't see her, you know? I mean, they'll just talk to each other, right?
Oh, they'll say, don't talk to each other. Don't talk to her. We're not her friend anymore. You know, I've seen kids do that. She's like the isolation shit.
Exactly. You know? But then to be called a conspiracy theorist, that's to be crazy. But when conspiracies happen all of the time. So what's wrong about theorizing about it if you know from history that they occur? I don't see that as a problem.
Hold on,
I don't mind any of the slurs. They call them slurs. I don't care. Conspiracy theorists, you know, Tim, like whatever, fine, you know. It doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah. The slurs that really bother me are drunken slurs, you know? mostly because I don't understand what they're saying, and I fear what I don't understand.
That's a good point. Drunken slurs. Yeah. That's funny. We have I'm of Irish descent. I'm red hair and freckly. And someone recently said that I already heard it said that, you know, people who are red hair and freckly are weaker, or they have a weaker constitution, or their immune systems are more sensitive. And I was
gingers?
I mean, there might be some truth to that, but the fact that I was like, well, you know, if you really think that that red hair and you really think that gingers are weaker, I suggest you go to Ireland and start a bar fight and just see what happens. Test that theory out at a bar in Ireland.
Like Lewis Black, he said, in Ireland, there's no such thing as Alcoholics Anonymous, because whenever there's a meeting, it's always at the bar. and there's no violence. You know, it's like, God damn you, son of a bitch, and then they pass out.
Right. but anyway, but that was just a joke. So I don't know if that's true or not. I actually think that it is, because in our community, in the autism community, I used to go to these conferences, and I would see, you know, red hair is pretty rare, but there's quite a few gingers in the community. So what it is about us, or that it is, you know, genetically that makes us or have kind of a weaker immune system, I don't know, but I have sort of seen that out in play. But it was just a funny thing to say, because, you know, Irish aren't necessarily weak people, but, you know, maybe they're more susceptible or have something genetically that doesn't allow us to detox as easily or something like that.
Well, I think I also interviewed Pam Killeen about this, and she says that every bloodline has its kind of foods that it's really good at processing. Like, she came from ginger roots as well, you know. My ginger roots. And apparently incredibly good at processing pork products and can draw a lot of nutrition out of them that other people's digestive systems can't.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Well, and everybody's got different propensities to different things. Like, some people are really, really bad with meat of any kind because their genetic roots stretch back to places where there weren't really a whole lot of animals to eat and stuff like this. It's very similar to Darwin's finches in a way, whereby the environment determines a lot of the characteristics that you have, but it doesn't radically change the organism.
Mm.
You know,
gotcha.
Like, they're both finches, but their beaks are slightly different because they eat slightly different food. Just like you can tell that a ginger person and a dark person are still both human beings, but they have different pigments and they have different susceptibility to diets and diseases and so on and so forth. Everybody's freaking different. We're all snowflakes.
Right. Exactly.
And some of us are just flakes.
Yeah. Yeah, and us gingers were, you know, as white as a snowflake behind the freckles. We're spotted snowflakes.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, Miss Spotted Snowflake and Miss African Queen Latifah lookalike winner, we will. That could be construed as an insult, but it was meant as a compliment.
I know.
I would like you to just wrap this up by giving us again a quick, brief rundown of your radio show, your websites, Facebook stuff, or whatever you feel like chucking in there, and we'll wrap it all up. You said you'd only give me 2 hours; it's already been three or more. So.
I know, we lied because we're having so much fun. I had to do some stuff.
Well, on air, but let's just say I manipulated you. Okay. Because when you said 2 hours, I go, nah, these girls are going to have so much fun. They're going to stay for 3 hours and they're going to be late. And I didn't say that, because I knew that if I told you up front that it would actually wind up being 3 hours, you wouldn't be able to do it. You know?
Well, you know, yeah, just on the spot at the time, I guess it was scary, but yeah, I mean, I had a great time. So you can find
you're very
a web-
charming. Thank
you're
you.
Charming and funny and yes. Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Apparently it's the accent. I thought for a long time that people laughed at my jokes because they were witty and clever and whatnot, but it turns out it's just a speech impediment.
We're just making fun of you. We're laughing at you, not with you. Basically.
He's got a funny accent.
anyway, you can find our website at truthortalk.com. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. We just joined a radio station, UCY.TV. Is there anything else you would like to add to that, April?
No, just like she said, everything is on truthortalk.com, our essays, our archived shows, and our new network is UCY.TV, so check us out.
Oh,
thanks.
Oh, we air Sundays Pacific Standard Time from 2 to 5 p.m. So.
In the United States.
In the United States. Vinny in New Zealand, yes, right.
Oh, that's very nice. So. And I presume there's online streams available as well.
Yes.
Yeah, archive. You can go to, when you go to the website, you can go to show episodes, and that has, we've done about 60 so far, 61, so.
Fantastic.
So they're all archived. Yeah, they're all archived. You can listen to your heart's content. So,
all right, truthatalk.com, ladies and gentlemen, for April Bowden and Verstein Henry, two very lovely girls. Thank you very much for spending the time with me.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
All right. And bear in mind, listeners, this is a listener-supported broadcast, so it only keeps going because of you. That's right. This is all your fault. So keep donating at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. We've moved into a larger house now, so we're able to bring in guests into studio, and we've got a second computer to train people how to do the iMovie and GarageBand and basically produce your own radio shows and videos and documentaries. So, you know, if you're in Auckland and you're an activist of some description and you want to learn from me how to do all this kind of stuff, you can come in and you'll work on my radio shows and my videos and things like that. I'll instruct you how to do them. And then once you've figured out how to do them, you can do them on your own without my help. And I would rather you go out there, be skilled in order to produce yourself and not need me to do it for you anymore. The way that this is meant to work in terms of Guerrilla Media House is to just empower people with the skills and if hopefully one day if when enough donations come in actually buy people like a computer or something like that, so that when you're doing your activism, you're going out there, you're exposing the court system or the child kidnapping rings in New Zealand or in any of these other branches of eclectic scumbaggery. Wouldn't it be great if you didn't need anybody to help you to expose that scumbaggery? That's the idea. Give you some independence. Give you the stuff that you need. All right. Hopefully that'll produce a better society and a more cohesive alternative media, because nobody will need any central branch of alternative media to give them credibility or airtime, because they can provide it for themselves. That's the idea. All right. Thank you, girls. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll see you again sometime.
Exception, you are only exception, you are.